Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 14th of October 2016. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are John Regan.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hi.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
We're without our regular reader, Brian Woodruff, this week, but I would like to wish him a happy 90th birthday for next week.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are New Town Estate Put Up for Sale, Irritation Over Silver Hill Site, and $190,000 Payoff for Health Boss. So we'll go over to John, please, for the first one.
Yes, and the headline on that is New Town Estate Put Up for Sale, and the subheading, After 26 Years, the Battle of Mitteldever Station Appears to Have Ended. Campaigners are celebrating the probable end of a 25-year planning saga. Zurich Assurance has put the 4,230-acre estate at Mitteldever Station on the market with a guide price of £45 million. The main campaign group says the relatively low asking price shows that Zurich no longer harbours any hope that it could be the location for a 12,500-home new town in Mitteldever. The threat, which first surfaced in 1990, prompted a major campaign by the Deva Society to stop the scheme getting planning permission, and it was rejected by the City Council, planning inspectors, and, in 2014, by the High Court. Stuart Patterson, chairman of the Deva Society and a tenant farmer of Zurich, said, "It was not just a case of local people fighting a massive development on their doorstep. The whole future of this part of Hampshire was at stake." He continued, "With a major development at Mitteldever, there would eventually have been almost continuous development from Basingstoke to Southampton, destroying the character of a large part of this beautiful county. Furthermore, it would have had an adverse economic impact on neighbouring towns such as Basingstoke, Andover and Winchester." Mr. Patterson said Zurich were marketing the land as still having development potential, but added, "However, Zurich also retains a clawback clause on any future development, so the incentive for any new owner to revive the new town idea is very limited. Any new owner should be aware that the Deva Society is still here and will fight as hard as ever should the new town idea again rear its ugly head." Zurich said in a statement yesterday, "Zurich regularly reviews the asset holdings of our funds to ensure that we can continue to meet our target asset benchmarks and deliver on our obligations." He continued, "Following the latest evaluation, we've concluded a sale of the Sutton Scotney estate is the optimal solution for all policyholders, and we'll consider each bid proposal carefully on its merits." The estate originally formed part of a 10,000-acre holding acquired by Lord Rank, the film mogul. It was purchased by Eagle Star, which subsequently became part of the Zurich Insurance Group. The estate includes over 3,900 acres of mainly Grade 3 arable land with some pasture. There are about 120 acres of mixed woodland, mainly in small blocks, belts and strips, which historically supported what was widely held to be the finest partridge shoot in the whole of Hampshire.
Irritation over Silver Hill site. When will something be built? That is the call from city councillors, frustrated with the lack of timescales about the future of the Silver Hill site. The project has gone back to square one after TH Real Estate were axed earlier this year, after their scheme was criticised for being too large. The £150 million scheme, which evolved from the late 1990s, was derailed in the High Court by Conservative councillor Kim Gottlieb. Now the scheme has been set back several years, and currently a cross-party informal policy group is attempting to create a Central Winchester Regeneration Supplementary Planning document. The document will be looked at by leading councillors at Cabinet, and it is hoped the document will be produced by June 2017, so it can be adopted by the end of the year. However, councillors aired frustrations at a Cabinet Major Projects Committee over a perceived lack of action and communication. Conservative councillor Ian Tate said, "A number of times people say to me, what is happening? The general public want to know when it is likely something will be built on the site. If you have a timeline and key dates, that means something to the public. I know it is difficult to put a particular date, but is it not a good discipline to set a date? People are belittling Winchester for its inability to deliver projects. For me, there would be a benefit of realistically setting a timeline." His thoughts were echoed by Winchester Liberal Democrat group leader Lucille Thompson. "I don't often say this, but I agree with Councillor Tate about this. We always get asked when is something happening on the Silver Hill site." Conservative Councillor Eileen Berry said, "People are not interested in station approach. They are interested in Silver Hill, and they have been for the last 40 years to get it sorted. They do not understand the fights and the intricacy of it all." Leader of Winchester City Council, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, agreed the timeline needs to be refined and there needs to be more communication on the long-term strategy. Deputy Leader of Winchester City Council and Leader of the Informal Policy Group, Vicky Weston, said the council is seeking interest from an urban design specialist who can help formulate the SPD.
The next item is entitled £190,000 Payoff for Health Boss. The chief executive of a Hampshire Health Trust has left following months of widespread condemnation. Katrina Percy has faced a public backlash after it emerged that she would rake in a £245,000 salary at Southern Health National Health Service Foundation Trust, despite quitting as chief executive to move to a new advisory role created for her in the wake of a series of scandals. Now she has stepped down completely following months of mounting pressure, but she will still receive a £190,000 payoff. It comes just weeks after the chairman, Tim Smart, quit his post, 4 months after being appointed by a health regulator to oversee improvements at the Trust, which operate Melbury Lodge and Lee House units in Winchester. Critics condemned Miss Percy's payment as unacceptably high, calling for the government to launch a shake-up of how the NHS is run. Miss Percy stepped down as chief executive in August and moved to a new strategic role created for her, a decision which grieving families branded scandalous. The Trust revealed she was stepping down due to her position becoming untenable. But the Trust revealed that the settlement entitled her to half her basic pay and a further 6 months' pay due to a previous review ruling that there was no negligence or incompetence during her leadership. The payment will not include extra cash for pension benefits, a spokesman confirmed. Eastleigh Member of Parliament Mims Davis welcomed her departure, saying that the advisory role had been a massive misjudgment. She said, "Both parties have finally seen sense. However, Miss Percy leaves with 12 months' salary in her back pocket, and this will be a cause of further anger. I understand she has not been found to be incompetent, but many people think she has failed patients and staff at Southern, and will see this as just a reward for failure." Southamptonshire MP Royston Smith said the payment was unacceptably high and added, while she remained there would constantly be a question mark over her performance and she would inevitably be a distraction. I hope her departure will allow patients, parents and those affected by the failings to draw a line under the past and look to the future. One of Miss Percy's fiercest critics, former Governor John Green, welcomed her departure as the right decision and added, "This isn't over. There are others on the board and there needs to be an independent investigation into how the Trust and the NHS is managed." Interim Chief Executive Julie Dawes is serving until a new chairman is found who will help appoint a new Chief Executive. Miss Percy's strategic role is being divided among colleagues, but it is unknown whether a replacement will be appointed, the Trust said. Of the 10,306 deaths between April 2011 and March 2015, 722 were categorised as unexpected, and only 272 were investigated.
Here are the death notices. Brown, Molly Evelyn Brown, aged 93. Johnson, Jean Johnson, very unexpectedly, aged 70. Long, Peter Long, peacefully in wife Val's arms, aged 72. Mundy, Anthony Mundy, peacefully at home. And Parfit, Ruth Parfit, or Mrs. P, at home, aged 94. And now, please, could we have Christian comment, Paul?
This week's Christian comment comes from the Reverend Graham Bowcutt, who's Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Alresford. He entitles it, "Follow Christ and Be Alive Today." The other day, whilst driving back from Darlington in County Durham, a land far, far away, I saw in the back of a lorry something that momentarily relieved the boredom, some very interesting words. The text said, "Show common sense today and be alive tomorrow." It then had a picture of a cyclist upon which someone had drawn a set of horns and a tail contained within a red circle with a line through, followed further by the words, "Do not undertake this lorry," which explained the initial statement. "Now," writes Graham, "I do a little bit of cycling and agree fully with the message contained on the back of this wagon. Undertaking lorries is a very dangerous thing, but it did strike me as a little ironic, based on the evidence of reckless tailgating the driver of the lorry was engaged in during this particularly long and arduous 50 mile per hour zone on the M1. I cannot deny I was struck by the words, perhaps because I was bored out of my tiny mind, or because the message was rather a brutal one. It did not mix its metaphors. It did not pussyfoot around the issue. Get run over by this lorry and you will die. Cheery message, I know. It is a good mantra, though, isn't it? I started to wonder about one or two of my own. Show you're happy and be sectioned tomorrow. Show you're a vegetarian and everything will be alive tomorrow. Show you're a choir member and everything will be a symphony tomorrow. Show you're a vicar and know everything needs to be done by tomorrow. Telephone the doctor today and forget about tomorrow. Your appointment's in a month. But best of all, show you're a follower of Christ and be alive today." Now, I like that one. The common sense bit is a little more tricky. I thought "show common sense" a particularly interesting idea, especially when thinking about something as difficult to define as common sense. The question is, common sense according to whom? Is it possible to define common sense? Well, yes, it is possible because it's in the dictionary, but everyone will have a view of what it is and who has it or not. Descartes knew well that common sense is the best distributed commodity in the world, for everyone is convinced that they are well supplied with it. My common sense tells me that I am impossible, which, if accepted, of course, makes you impossible, the world, the universe, everything impossible, except here we are, all of us impossible, and all of us part of something impossible to define. We think we can, but we cannot. Therefore, the only way to make any sense of our existence is theologically. To wonder at the greatness of our existence is to wonder at God, who made everything, holds everything, and loves everything. Show you're a follower of Christ and receive life today. Now that's a bumper sticker.
On to the letters, please, and we'll go over to John for the first letter to the editor.
Yes, and this one has a very positive heading, Thanks Are Due, and it's from Simon Cook, who lives in Shepherdstown, Arlesford. Sir, congratulations and thanks are due to former Mayor Councillor Eileen Berry for her support of the officers who work so loyally for the City Council. Her letter in last week's Chronicle was a welcome demonstration that there was at least one City Councillor who was prepared, or even dared, to support the excellent officers who work so hard for Winchester. It reflects badly on the City Councillors that a public show of support for the officers has been so absent in the face of the onslaught of highly critical correspondence published in your letters page. Many of these letters demonstrate ignorance of the fundamental principles of local government, which is that it's the elected councillors who make the decisions and not the officers. The fact is that the ruling Conservative administration is responsible for the failure of the Silver Hill development project, as it is for the demise of the station approach scheme. However, in the latter case, the Lib Dems bear a heavy slice of the responsibility by supporting the Conservative councillor who so successfully campaigned against Silver Hill. The other fact, which is apparently not understood by council taxpayers, is that the failure of these two schemes has and will cost a lot of money. The costs will be paid by the whole district and not just those who live within the city boundary of Winchester. I suggest that had the councillors accepted the professional advice of the officers, then both schemes would have proceeded with considerable financial and economic benefit to the whole district council.
And Mark Byford's letter praises the Winchester Poetry Festival. Sir, may I thank the organisers of last weekend's Winchester Poetry Festival for an outstanding programme. The quality and range of events this year were excellent. Simon Armitage's spine-tingling reading of his new poem, Hence, specially commissioned for the festival, and inspired by Anthony Gormley's sculpture, Sound 2, in the crypt at Winchester Cathedral, was especially memorable. So too was Professor Nicholas Rowe's brilliant lecture on John Keats in Winchester, in which he connected Keats' much-loved poem, To Autumn, written whilst he was staying in the city in September 1819, back to King Alfred the Great and the birth of the English language. The poets and the readings demonstrated originality, flair, and ambition. It was an inspiring, enjoyable, and thought-provoking festival that, I hope, will become an integral part of the city's cultural celebrations for years to come. Mark Byford, Clifton Hill, Winchester.
The next letter is from Tony Cole, who writes from Hildenborough in Kent. It's called Family Search. Sir, I'm trying to find out any information about Elsie Ida Campbell and her son Geoffrey, who lived in Winchester many years ago. Ida lived at 8 St. Peter Street until the time of her death, probably in the late 1950s. She was born Elsie Ida Lake in 1885, the daughter of William Lake, the proprietor of a butcher's business in Kingsgate Street, and his wife Elizabeth Annie Lake, née Hart. In the years leading up to the First World War, Ida was a teacher at the Erinsville School in St. Peter Street, which was also where she lived. But by 1915, she was working as a nursing auxiliary at Hill House, a Red Cross convalescent home in Lyndhurst. There, she met a Canadian soldier. Alex Campbell, whom she subsequently married, and in 1916 they had a son, Geoffrey, Geoffrey Campbell. After the war, Alex returned to Canada, but it is believed abandoned his wife and son, who then returned to Winchester. Ida had two brothers and a sister, whose descendants may still live in the Winchester area. Her widowed sister, Mrs. Elizabeth Annie Sargent, was listed on the electoral register for 1942 as living at the same address in St. Peter Street with Ida. The Sargent family were engravers in Winchester. Does anybody remember them? I would love to hear from any present-day members of the Lake or Sargent families, or any readers who have any recollections of Ida or Geoffrey. I will explain my connection and the reason for my inquiry to any respondents, and all replies will be treated in confidence. Please reply by email to rosemarytony@hotmail.com or telephone 01732 833 584. Tony Cole, Fellows Way, Hildenborough, Kent.
Have some vision. Sir, we were extremely disappointed to find out in the Chronicle of October the 6th that Winchester's backward-thinking planners have let us down again. Not content with presiding over the fiascos of Station Approach, Silver Hill, and the relocation refurbishment of the Sports Centre, they've now decided that Molly's Den must close. As a young family, we often pop into Molly's Den to have lunch or a coffee, and I really can't understand what harm this business is doing, apart from enhancing a pretty bland industrial estate and providing a service to local residents. Surely it's time for Winchester to give its residents the facilities and vision they deserve. The planners seem to stand in the way of any kind of progress, and this needs to change. Enough is enough. And that impassioned letter comes from Ian Trinder, who lives on Berwick Way in Winchester.
Affordable rent? Sir, homeless groups get £1 million bonanza and plea to tackle HMO problem, Chronicle September the 29th. Buy-to-let landlords are licensed by the City Council, and so should the rents. The rent charged by a landlord for a room is at least £20 a week more than the council will pay in benefits. With up to 8 tenants rammed into a 3-bedroom semi, the profits are huge. Indeed, one of the bigger landlords, as he calls himself, converts side passages on his houses into rooms. No wonder young families can't find a suitable home, never mind getting onto the property ladder. These landlords put the squeeze on people that can least afford it. The night shelter received £80,000 in housing benefit last year. They and the Trinity are far better placed to help. Are landlords prepared to work with these charities and accept an affordable rent? I doubt it. Adam Nicholas, Paintersfield, St Cross, Winchester.
The next letter is entitled Height Restriction and is written by Robert Barnes, Elizabeth Place, Winchester. Sir, in the centre of Washington, D.C., USA, no building shall be higher than the width of the road it stands in. The result is pleasing and impressive. I suggest that this ancient capital of Winchester, Wessex, adopt the same rule for the redevelopment of Silver Hill and Station Approach. We need space, light and air more than semi-darkness, suffocation and profit for a few. Robert Barnes, Elizabeth Place, Winchester.
This letter's headed Devonish House. Sir, the announcement of the planned closure of Devonish House in the near future is very sad news. It will be a considerable loss for the city in its provision of care for the vulnerable elderly. Our mother spent the final 4 years of her life as a resident at Devonish House and received exemplary kindness and care from dedicated, loving staff. Her degenerative neurological illness was challenging for both herself and her family to face, yet there was comfort to be found in the dignity she was afforded and the concern that was constantly expressed for her well-being by the tireless, dedicated staff. The house itself might lack the smart superficialities of a purpose-built nursing home, but such places are generally propelled by businesses with stringent financial agendas. Devonish House, in our 4-year-long experience, was driven only by compassion and sympathy for its residents and their families. We'll always be profoundly grateful to the staff for making our mother feel treasured and valued right up to the moment of her death, which they shared with the utmost sensitivity and respect. It's hard to imagine an easy replacement for Devonish House. And that letter comes from Jude Wilson of Winchester and Jane Gordy of Twyford.
Apology for marathon disruptions. Sir, referring to recent coverage of the Winchester Half Marathon, I confirm that Chris Rees, race director, has written to apologise for the disruption caused to church, businesses and some residents in Hursley on the day of the race. He explained that the road diversion was contracted to a traffic management company who, it would appear, exceeded their brief and closed the southern part of the village where there was no TRO in place for this. The stewards failed to distinguish between a diversion route for through traffic and controlled access for local traffic. If these simple rules had been respected, disruption would have been considerably less. Chris also apologised for the rudeness experienced by some villagers or members of the church congregation at the hands of some stewards. Other villagers who did not need to go out or come into the village that day watched and enjoyed the race. Eleanor Bell, Chairman, Hursley Parish Council, Heathcote Place, Hursley. And there is a photo with this letter of some very athletic-looking runners running through Hursley Village.
The next letter is entitled Model Decision and refers to a model that one Richard Brown, Roger Brown, made of Winchester City as it appeared in Victorian times, a relief model. And this comes from Janet Owen, of the Chief Executive, Hampshire Cultural Trust, Chilcombe Lane at Bar End, Winchester. Sir, we've been pleased to see recent letters, Sally Heather, September the 22nd, Charles Baslinton, September the 29th, and Peter Jones, October the 6th, welcoming the decision to house the Roger Brown model in the City Museum and advocating a new and larger museum in the city to commemorate Winchester's outstanding heritage. The Roger Brown model is a unique record of our city in Victorian times, made by a man with real vision and love for Winchester. We are delighted that we have now the opportunity to display this extraordinary and unique model in the heart of the city for residents and visitors alike to enjoy. There has been some speculation regarding the fate of the shops currently in the museum, Hunt's and Foster's. The shop fronts will not be removed, but will be complemented by the arrival of the model and our innovative plans using digital interpretation to connect them to the model and shopping as it was in Victorian Winchester. To help us bring the model to life with the sound and light experience that Roger envisaged, we are raising funds to make his vision a reality. We encourage your readers to visit our website to find out how they can support this exciting project. With regard to the future of the City Museum, I'm delighted to report that Hampshire Cultural Trust does have an ambitious project to celebrate and promote the ancient royal city of Winchester as a centre of key significance in the development of England and English culture. This vision includes the establishment of a new museum in the long term. An early sign of progress with this project is a one-day symposium, Winchester, a Nation Emerges, which is being held in the Guildhall later in the month. We shall be delighted to keep your readers up to speed with developments on both of these exciting changes for our cultural offering in Winchester as they unfurl. Janet Owen, Chief Executive, Hampshire Cultural Trust, Chilcombe Lane, Bar End, Winchester.
So can we have chronicle comment now, please, from John?
Yes, and it's headed, "Decisions are better late than never." It's called Bowing to the Inevitable. The Zurich Group has finally, after 26 years, seemingly given up on developing a new town at Mitchell Dever Station. And Katrina Percy, who's become somewhat of a sick joke at Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, has also gone. Although, thankfully, it didn't take 26 years for her to be prized out. It just felt like it. Neither will be missed. Both had clung on long after their time had gone. Miss Percy was an example of the mindset, some might say arrogance, of many managers in large organisations with little real accountability or effective scrutiny, who think that the rules of common decency do not apply. Moving out now into the fresh air, the residents enjoying the Hampshire downland around Mitchell Dever can surely breathe a sigh of relief. Their campaign that started in 1990 against the new town was not a case of NIMBYism. The Mitchell Dever New Town proposal for 12,500 homes between Winchester and Basingstoke was a monstrous idea. The campaigners' perseverance, backed up by Winchester City Council, has done Winchester and Hampshire a great service. Yes, there must be new houses, many thousands of them in the Winchester district, but their siting must be much more sophisticated than simply plonking them around a railway station in the middle of unspoiled countryside.
And on to first person, please, Maria.
The High Street is now dying. It's hard to judge which recent news has been more shocking, that the 1980s perm is back in fashion, or that Next is closing down. Three major women's clothes shops are gone, going. Others look wobbly. If Next can't make it, who can? Asked one independent retailer. The High Street is dying, he added. And other shop owners look worryingly ahead to Christmas. It's no seasonal bonanza. The Christmas market sucks the life out of their business. Some don't bother opening at the same time. Their objections to the market stalls, which currently fill up the High Street, are ignored. One empty glass-fronted shop in a prominent spot now stores the metal structures. It's a hideous sight. Retail is in transition in the digital age, we're told. Online can be cheaper. It's also nicer trying on new clothes at home out of the glare of a changing room spotlight and a 360-degree mirror. I'm at the age now where I don't want to see myself from the back, nor the sides for that matter. But why so many empty shops and stores in Britain's most desirable town? There's enough wealth to support London-style house prices and population growth. So why does the shop previously occupied by Monsoon have to be another fast food chain? How many skinny lattes does one town need? Are we also the city that never sleeps? It doesn't look like that at 9 p.m. on a weekday. Surely more should be done to support independent traders in and into permanent sites. Yet the City Council has closed down Molly's Den, the wonderful quirky antiques emporium at Winnall. It's a vibrant hub for 200 sellers operating out of a disused warehouse. This shows a lack of sympathy for local retailers. Another independent Winchester retailer wants the council to examine the high rents charged by commercial real estate owners and estate agents. No wonder retail workers are vulnerable to barely minimum wages and long hours. Are reduced council business rates being offered to hard-pressed independent retailers? There are other worrying signs the council has lost the plot. Public toilets look more like health hazard than convenience. City centre litter appears to be getting worse. Why no attempt to at least keep up appearances with the buildings that lie empty around Silver Hill with temporary murals? Cheap boarding and giant weeds make for a sorry sight. Is the long-term plan that we are twinned with Aleppo? Is it really the case that the multi-storey car park, suddenly taken out of use in the tense build-up to the final decision on Silver Hill, cannot be fixed up in the short term? It looks pretty robust. People complain too of a rise in unchecked and antisocial behaviour, of the depressingly high numbers of homeless people and those with terrible addictions wandering around or in distress. One city centre retailer had two ambulances outside his shop in 2 days, dealing with victims of overdosing. Not surprisingly, in this newspaper, the heroic voluntary sector has appealed for more resources to cope with rising numbers. Is there a task force looking into how to sustain a high street for everyone? Are there views of successful independent retailers running great shops, eateries and pubs being taken seriously? Is there anyone listening to public suggestions for a new museum or looking into how the many hidden historic spaces on the high street could be opened up? Instead, the powers that be are locked into a ridiculous, vindictive campaign against the one councillor who had the courage to expose the way procurement laws were being broken, how the plans for Silver Hill were not good enough for this great city, and who helped instigate a much-needed independent inquiry into the council's institutional culture. Throw your toys out of the pram if you must, but don't take it out on our city.
And I'll take Belgarum on to me, the alternative look at the news. There are a couple of items here. The first one is clown craze hits county. Police in Hampshire have been called to a string of incidents where pranksters have dressed as sinister clowns to deliberately scare people. People have been goaded, harassed and chased in stunts launched in the so-called killer clowns craze, with one woman allegedly threatened at knife point by someone dressed in a mask. The disturbing incidents are part of an epidemic of attacks across the country just weeks before Halloween, which have gone viral on social media and left people fearing to leave their homes and children too scared to sleep at night. Now, elderly care groups warn that the perpetrators could be putting lives at risk, and schools in the county are sending warnings to parents. And it comes as police warn anyone responsible for the attacks will face tough punishments. One clown has been spotted lurking on the platform at Micheldever Station. Perpetrators dress up as clowns, mainly at night, in scenes reminiscent of horror films Poltergeist and Stephen King's It. Photographs have emerged on social media of a clown eerily peering out from behind a building in Fareham, while another has been posted showing a clown lurking the platform at Micheldever Station. A group of girls were chased by two clowns and a man dressed in black in International Way, Western Southampton, and cornered in a tower block. People were called, but say no one was arrested. And there's so a couple of very muddled, muzzy photographs which are supposed to show clowns, but you can hardly see the faces at all. And then feline conundrum. Residents in the Itchen Valley are still baffled by the mysterious friendly feline seen in the area. As reported in the Hampshire Chronicle, people have seen a large wild cat, which sparked chatter among locals who were unsure what it was. But people have contacted the Chronicle directly, saying the cat could match the breed of their own pets. Both people who sent in pictures of their cat are certain that it is a British short-haired cat, but say it could also be a spotted Bengal. Luke Hunter, president of Panthera, a charity devoted to protecting big cats, believes the cat is either a big domestic cat or a Bengal. And there are pictures of three cats. I'm not sure whether one of them is supposed to be the actual wild cat. They've all got spots. And they do look quite large. Right, from that we will go to the historical section. And we'll start with 200 years ago, please, John.
Yes, October the 14th, 1816. The first of these two short pieces is an interesting reflection on health and safety concerns all that time ago. Dangers on water. On Wednesday, Mr. Chubb, a carpenter, one of the 17 who were upset in the Thames on Saturday morning, complained to the Lord Mayor that the watermen persisted in conveying in their boats such numbers of workmen at a time to and from the place near which the accident occurred as to endanger the lives of all the passengers. The Lord Mayor expressed his surprise at conduct so shameful and observed that he was convinced that the contractors were not aware of the circumstance. He immediately wrote to Mr. Banks and Mr. Jolliffe on the subject. And we can be, I think, reassured they'll sort it out. Second piece, End Army Farm Work. Major General Hope, commanding the forces in North Britain, has, at the request of the Lord Provost of Edinburgh, issued an order prohibiting employment of soldiers in the harvest of this season and recalling such permissions as may have already been granted. The indulgence, says the order, was intended for the benefit of the country to get the corn in as fast as possible in plentiful seasons and not by any means to interfere with the useful employment of the ordinary husbandman or labouring poor, who at present suffer much distress from want of work.
100 years ago, October the 14th, 1916, and there are two items. The first one concerns U-boat menace. The realities of the war have been brought home to Americans by the activities of U-boats off the Atlantic coast. Nine vessels are reported to have been sunk, and it is declared that two, if not three, German submarines are infesting the Atlantic route. The deepest resentment has been aroused by the outrages in the course of which American lives have been imperiled and all eyes are turned to Washington. So far, President Wilson has given no indication of the course he intends to adopt. And the second item is headed Votes for All. Sir, it is generally accepted now that our brave soldiers and sailors should be enfranchised. But when it comes to munition workers, male and female, and all those employed on government work, the conscientious objectors and their wives, as well as conscripts and friendly aliens who join the colours, the problem assumes a very complicated aspect. Adult suffrage, votes to all men and all women, would dilute the electorate to such an extent as to practically disenfranchise all but the working men and wives and grown-up children. The position of the educated and wealthy classes under such conditions would become intolerable.
Fifty years ago, October the 15th, 1966, there are two items. The first is entitled Departing PCs, meaning police constables. Although figures for police officers resigning from the force were lower than the wastage rate for most other forms of employment, the matter still gave great cause for concern. The chief constable, Mr. Douglas Osmond, told the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority at Winchester on Monday. He reported that between June the 24th and October the 5th this year, two dozen constables left the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Constabulary. Declared Mr. F.F. Hollis, one of the Isle of Wight representatives, all these men have been trained and the minimum cost is between £500 and £1,000 per man. One would like to have a rather fuller report as to the reasons why all these men a going out of the force. The second item is entitled Alarming Growth. The dangers of the Buchanan feasibility study of South Hampshire were outlined by the Earl of Malmesbury, president of the Fareham and Hants Farmers Club, on Wednesday night. Speaking at the club's annual dinner, he said the suggested population growth of 1.75 million people in the area between Portsmouth and Southampton was little short of alarming. "We who are interested in Hampshire have to think seriously about this before we accept such a figure," he continued. "There is a danger of destroying what so many of us love." The suggested areas of recreation, he explained, were the Downs, the New Forest, and the Solent. Yet to the forest, the life of the commoners and the naturalists still went on.
And I've forgotten what's next.
It's 25 years ago.
25 yes. years, we got on to there.
25,
I was caught unawares.
How could we forget? 25 years ago. First one, call to ban tobacco advertising from 1991. Winchester Health Authority has called on the government to back controversial European legislation to ban all tobacco advertising. The authority was responding to the Health of the Nation consultation paper, setting out proposals to reduce Britain's main killer diseases. A response document for Winchester has been drawn up by Dr. Viv Speller, Director of Health Promotion, who said she hoped that the government could be persuaded not to adopt policies detrimental to health, in her words. She continued, "For example, the government should support the proposed European directive to ban all tobacco advertising as its contribution to the target on smoking reduction." And then the second small piece here is headed Gypsy Site Search. Hampshire County Council's Gypsy Sites panel has taken further steps towards completing the task of site provision by identifying possible sites along the M3 and M27 corridors to provide facilities for gypsies moving through the county. The Caravan Sites Act of 1968 requires county councils to provide accommodation, and so far Hampshire has provided 5 sites giving permanent accommodation for 100 gypsy families. These are said to be operating well, with few problems. And now, work on a 6th permanent site at Dummer, south of Basingstoke, which will accommodate another 20 families, commenced last week.
Now we have what's on in the next couple of weeks. There's not an awful lot. I think in 2 weeks' time it's half term and almost everything is for children, so we haven't really included it. But we have the Spitfire Sisters coming to the Theatre Royal, Winchester, on October the 28th and the 29th at 7:30 p.m. They will give you an evening of 30s and 40s harmony. To book, telephone 01962 840 440. And the RAF are in concert at the Anvil, Basingstoke, on Wednesday the 25th of October, at 7:30 p.m. Excuse me. For tickets for that, ring 01256 844 244. And if you would like a chance to make friends and eat lunch in company, there are Age UK lunch clubs where you can have lunch for £3.50. On Mondays, the venue is St Barnabas Church Hall Week. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, they're at the Baptist Church Hall, Swan Lane, in the middle of Winchester. On Wednesdays, it's the Salvation Army Hall in Parchment Street. And on the second and fourth Fridays, they're at Winnell Community Centre. And if you want more information about this, ring 01264 354425. That's 01264 354425. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 14th of October, at 7:27 a.m. and begins again at 6:14 p.m. On Wednesday the 19th of October, it ends at 7:36 a.m. and begins again at 6:03 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we'll continue with items of general news. And we'll go over to John for the first one, please.
Yes, this piece is about the Boomtown Festival and its good news. Headline, Boomtown in £100,000 handouts to charities. The Boomtown Festival near Winchester has donated nearly £100,000 to charity this year. Charities, education and awareness, along with local engagement, are a large part of the ethos of the Boomtown Festival. And the 60,000 capacity festival goers also donated money to local communities, supported local businesses, and provided free tickets for nearby residents. Boomtown directors Lake Mitchell and Chris Rutherford said, "It's a privilege to be in a position to be able to support so many charities locally and across the globe. The dramatic increase in funds raised shows that we can achieve a lot in 1 year alone, and it's been outstanding. We look forward to the future and raising even more money, awareness and supplies for the now vital role many of these charities are fulfilling." Some £46,380 was raised for Oxfam through the stewarding partnership, and a further £15,000 raised through the district-themed Oxfam shop, with a total of £10,000 split between the parishes bordering the festival site to invest in local projects. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance was given £7,255 through the ongoing steward partnership. And a group of local community volunteers from Twyford collected 160 sleeping bags, 85 tents, 58 roll mats, 13 self-inflating mats, 17 rugs and blankets, plus quantities of miscellaneous clothing, shoes, wellies, canned food, pots and pans, lamps, pumps and chairs, all of which were donated to the Calais Jungle. And there are numerous other causes that benefited too. Boomtown is keen to highlight its charitable giving, showing that the festival brings benefits to the area to offset the traffic disruption that the event causes, particularly at the end of the 3-day event. Boomtown organisers are on the lookout for their main charity partner for the 2017 event, and so are looking for Hampshire or Hampshire-based charities, and they can be contacted on an email address, local_community@boomtownfair.co.uk, but I'm sure if you just Google Boomtown Fair, you'd find that.
Plans progressing for Leisure Centre. Plans for a new leisure centre in Winchester are moving forward. The £34 million scheme to replace the crumbling River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester and replace it with a new facility at Bar End was discussed at Winchester City Council's Major Projects Committee. As reported in the Chronicle in July, it was decided that the council will press ahead with plans for the multi-million pound leisure centre, which will include a 50-metre pool, which is close to Olympic size, a 12-court sports hall, a hydrotherapy pool, 4 studios and other facilities. However, one of the stumbling blocks and concerns is the exact location. Sports campaigners and residents have called for it to be built on the Garrison Ground, which is owned by Tesco, rather than the King George V playing fields, where it is currently earmarked. They fear If it is built there, it will lead to a loss of children's facilities and open space. Leader of the Winchester City Council, Stephen Godfrey, said at a Cabinet Major Projects Committee that negotiations are ongoing with Tesco about the building. The facility to the front... I'll read that again. About building the facility to the front of Winchester Sports Stadium. Councillor Godfrey said, Tesco has approached us directly, and since then we have been negotiating on the subject of transfers and use of the land, and it has been very productive, and members can see exempt papers which give a full update. He added, negotiations have moved ahead very well, and we hope for good news over the next few weeks. If that does go about, we will be carrying out a planning exercise around the whole Bar End site. The council has started to commission a lead project manager and a cost consultant who is likely to be appointed by November. However, the next decision to proceed is likely to be made in the summer of 2017, as a longer timescale required to appoint an architect.
The next item is a new power plant plans to be heard. Renewed proposals to build a power plant in Sparsholt before planners on Thursday. The new plans for a so-called green gas mill at Sparsholt College have caused concern with residents who say they have not addressed any of the issues raised in its previous rejection back in April. However, planning officers are recommending that the committee approves the scheme with conditions. At a meeting in the village in August, locals said their main fears were the size of the scheme and the fact the new plans are too similar to those previously turned down. Sparsholt College claims the plant, an anaerobic digester which turns grass into gas, can produce power for nearly 5,000 homes a year. It would need 60,000 tonnes of fuel to do this, which green energy company Ecotricity, who is behind the plans, said would be sourced within a 15-kilometre radius of the college and transported by tractors and trailers. However, many sceptics have questioned the viability of this claim. Addressing the points made at the meeting, Sparsholt College Principal Tim Jackson said there still appears to be some confusion that may mislead members of the public. He said in August, the fact is Winchester City Council refused the initial planning application on transport grounds, which is why these were the concerns addressed within the resubmission. For the villages near to the college, Ecotricity have specifically addressed transport concerns and done so at two meetings with local parish council representatives. Sparsholt Village will have no tractors and trailers using the roads, and many other timing alterations and routing requests that were discussed at the meetings were agreed and have been included in the revised submission. Routing is proposed to be monitored through the use of GPS, Global Positioning System, trackers on web vehicles. There were more than 200 objections for the original plans, which include an educational building where students will learn how to operate the machine. The parish council claims the students will not get any hands-on experience and has questioned why it has to be so big. However, Principal Jackson added, it's a claim without substance and it simply isn't true. Alongside the generation of clean, green energy, the overriding reason Sparsholt College sought to house the green gas mill at the college was so that existing and future students would get more hands-on experience with harvesting and transporting, analytical and plant operational experience.
Yes, and here's an item that refers to some news that was touched on earlier on. Molly's Den order. Winchester civic chiefs have defended their stance against Molly's Den Emporium. The indoor market at Winall is set to close following the planning inspectorate's rejection of an appeal from the operators of Molly's Den. The retail centre and cafe, based in the old shopping shipping containers at a warehouse in Moorside Road in Wunnell, opened without planning permission in August 2014. The City Council refused formal permission in May 2015 and issued an enforcement notice that November. The inspector's ruling supports the council's decision and gives the owners 4 months to stop their activities. This decision leaves dozens of independent traders with an uncertain future at the premises. Council of Victoria Western, City Council portfolio holder for Built Environment, said, "The issue with Molly's Den is not what it does, but where it's located. The council welcomes retail activities of this type in the town centre, where they're in sustainable locations and contribute to the vitality of the city. The council's decision to take enforcement action was based on sound local and national policy designed to support town centres." Pause for laughter. "It also important to protect a successful commercial and industrial area like Wunnell from premises being converted to uses which may then prove incompatible with existing occupiers." The council's enforcement notice was subject to an appeal and was independently considered by a planning inspector who agreed with the council's position based on national and local policy and on the facts of the case. "If Molly's Den can find suitable premises in the town centre, we'd be delighted. The council is keen to promote independent retailers in the right place."
Hundreds turn out at Town's Apple Day Fun. Hundreds of people enjoyed Alford's newest tradition on Sunday. An estimated 400 people enjoyed the Market Town's second Apple Day held at Albury Park on a beautiful early autumn day. It was organised by the Town Rotary Club to put to good use the thousands of apples that are currently falling from the trees. Mark Porter, one of the organisers, said the Rotarians process nearly 2 tonnes of the fruit to be turned into 800 litres of apple juice. The deal was that half of the juice from the apples was returned to the owners and half was sold to raise funds for Rotary charities. There were a large number of food and drink stalls as well as entertainment from Basingstoke Morris dancers, Winchester ukulele, Juggling Jake, and a solo guitarist. Local craftspeople, Sunhill Infant School, and a Mr. Applehead store complemented the range of attractions. "A wonderful day out was had by all," said Mr. Porter. "The general public appears to be taking more interest in apples, a fruit ideally suited to England's wet climate." As well as the Alsford Day, Hill Farm in Swanmore held its own inaugural Apple Day on October the 1st. Organisations such as Hampshire Fair have fostered increased interest in apples at a time when many native varieties are becoming extinct. Although the British cider industry is doing well, it uses very few varieties. And there are two lovely photos with this article. One is of 5-year-old Douglas Booth and Alfie Walker. Alfie Walker is dressed as a knight. I don't know what that had to do with the apples. And Douglas Booth looks like more of a modern soldier. And then Charlotte Slater with her 6-year-old twins, Hannah and Lauren. They're all smiling. They're all holding up apples and look like they're really enjoying the day.
Friends AIM raised £20,000 to buy ultrasound machine. The Friends of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, has launched a public appeal to fund a £20,000 ultrasound machine. The investment will support pain relief for breast surgery and obstetrics in Florence Portal House. The independent charity donated more than £60,000 last year to mark its 60th anniversary, and in excess of £2 million has been donated towards the purchase of over 1,000 items of medical equipment in support of patient care and recovery at the Royal Hampshire since 1955. The Friends has agreed to support the £20,000 cost of the diagnostic equipment, which will be used every day in Florence Portal House by the anaesthetic and intensive care unit teams. This appeal comes on top of a further £25,000 donated by the Friends this year. The Friends has set up a MyDonate facility through its website and invites donations from all who wish to support the provision of this ultrasound-guided pain relief for those requiring treatment. Friends Chairman Richard Chisnell said, "With the continuing squeeze on capital expenditure items by the National Health Service, any funding by the Friends can have far-reaching implications for patient care and recovery. On behalf of the Friends, I express our sincere gratitude to all members of the public, along with local businesses who feel able to support our efforts. The local community is our main source of income, and we need to encourage and sustain a public focus on our brilliant hospital to ensure it remains fit for patient purpose in the 21st century."
Event to tackle housing crisis. The housing crisis was the subject of a meeting at Winchester University last Wednesday evening. The university brought together high-profile experts from key parts of the housing industry to focus on issues like residential house building, the built environment, and policy making, and to discuss the housing crisis. The event, to be called Tackling the Housing Crisis, was chaired by John Denham, former MP and now Professor of English Identity and Politics, and Director of the Centre for English Identity and Politics. In advance of the event, Professor Tony Curtis said, "Today's housing crisis is complex, with few homes being built, many homes too expensive to buy, especially in London and the South East, social housing oversubscribed, and the private rented sector costly and insecure. House building rates are inadequate, homelessness is up, people cannot always access mortgages, and access to affordable housing is difficult. Rents in the private sector are unaffordable for many. But a decent, affordable home is a basic right and fundamental to well-being. So I anticipate a lively debate about possible solutions to this crisis amongst our expert panel and some tough questions from those people attending. And no doubt there'll be a full report on that in next week's Hampshire Chronicle. Meanwhile, housing is a major issue in Winchester, where prices have rocketed out of the reach of thousands of people in the last 20 years. In the local area, house building has not kept pace with demand, although 2,000 homes are being built at Barton Farm, with 800 reserved for people on the council housing register."
Prison blasted for taxi usage. Winchester Prison has come under fire for spending taxpayers' money transporting inmates by cab to a hospital which is a stone's throw away. The prison regularly uses taxis to ferry prisoners to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, just 150 yards away. A former prison officer said, "The issue was caused by a few factors, including a lack of vehicles, drivers, and budget pressures." The source said, "The prison has a van, which it will use, but there's only one of them. So taxis are used if you get more than two appointments at the same time. And if you take them to somewhere far afield, then that leaves us to use taxis. It was obvious what the fix was, but it never happened. The fix would be to have additional vehicles and recruit additional drivers, but that did not happen due to staff budgets elsewhere. When we talked about the things we would change, then that was one of them. It could have been a simple fix. I do hope they change it." The source described it as a horrendous waste of money, but added that there was no waiting around by the taxis, contrary to what was reported in the Daily Mirror. Eastleigh Happy Cabs confirmed to the Chronicle that they regularly take prisoners to the hospital and have been doing so for the past 6 months. A staff member said, "We do run a service for them, but what they pay us, that's between us and them. It is as and when, if they have not got the staff to cope." The Taxpayers Alliance have criticised the use of taxis, John O'Connell, chief executive, said, "Taxpayers have every right to be angry that so much of their money is being spent ferrying prisoners just a few hundred yards. It may be out of the question for prisoners to simply be walked over to the hospital, but surely if the prison has its own transport, then that should be used instead. When savings need to be found, prison bosses need to seriously consider whether this is a sensible use of their resources." A prison service spokesperson said, "Taxis are the most cost-effective and safe way of transporting prisoners across short distances whilst ensuring the public is protected." The spokesman added, "When they are transported, they're always handcuffed and accompanied by prison officers, and that taxis can be called at short notice and respond quickly to urgent requirements."
Clampdown bid. Police are attempting to clamp down on a new type of burglary in the county. Burglars have been travelling to properties in Chandler's Ford, Winchester and the New Forest on stolen motorbikes before forcing entry and stealing jewellery and other valuables. Since September the 6th, there have been 12 burglaries which are being linked as part of the operation, where the offenders are believed to be using at least two different stolen motorbikes, a sports motorbike and a trials off-roader. So far, the offenders are mainly targeting detached houses and using rear entrances to gain access and are causing significant damage to the doors.
Here's a bit of advance news of one of those seasonal events which shows us that Christmas is just round the corner. Headed, "Roll Up for Santa Fun Run." The Winchester Santa Fun Run returns on Sunday, December the 4th. Some 700 runners will raise money for Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices. It's become a Christmas tradition for many families, but with just 700 places available, the charity is urging people to sign up early or risk missing out. The 2015 run saw the Santas tackling a 5-kilometre route from Winchester Guildhall dressed in Father Christmas's traditional attire. Over 100 people have already signed up, and organisers are confident that it will sell out long before the event. Naomi House and Jack's Place expect the event to raise more than £25,000 towards the cost of providing a magical Christmas for the region's life-limited and life-threatened children. And it doesn't give details of registration, but I'm quite sure you can do that online through Naomi House or by telephone. That's accompanied by a lovely picture from last year's event of a mum and two little children, all hand in hand, running along the high street just outside Marks and Spencer's. And amusingly, they're being watched by a rather large gentleman in a ski jacket with a white beard eating a sandwich. And I think there's every chance that might be undercover Santa making sure everything's going properly.
Students are trapped in slaughterhouse with VR. Scores of people have been transported inside pig farms and slaughterhouses to experience life alongside animals bound for the dinner table. Showcased at the University of Winchester, the iAnimal project, created by group Animal Equality, allowed viewers through virtual reality technology to feel like they were trapped with animals. Filmed over 18 months inside farms in the UK, Germany and Italy, as well as a slaughterhouse in Spain, this is the first time a film such as this has been presented on a VR headset. Hannah Wade, student at the University of Winchester, said, "To experience life from a pig's point of view was incredibly moving. I hope this will help connect people with where most of our pork comes from." Fellow student George Britton added, "It's shocking that this reality is not more widely known." Another student that watched the film was Morgan Murphy. "I knew it was bad, but seeing it is eye-opening," he admitted. "To treat animals like that is not on." The visit to Winchester last week was the second UK stop of the group's worldwide tour. And there's a photograph with this article of three of the students with their VR headsets on, watching the film.
Demolition begins at unsafe car park. The partial demolition of Friarsgate car park will start on Monday. Work by Armac Demolition is expected to last until March and cost about £800,000. The multi-storey stack closed in March 2015 for safety reasons, and the long-term future of the site will be resolved as part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Project, otherwise known as Silver Hill. Councillor Steve Miller, City Council portfolio holder for estates and local economy, said Friarsgate multi-storey car park was constructed in two phases. The first, over the shops on Middlebrook Street, is in better condition and can remain in place, although there will be no access for vehicles following the demolition of the rear half of the car park. Due to the condition of the rear part of the car park, it is necessary to demolish that part of the structure as it has reached the end of its design life, with significant defects apparent which are beyond repair. The condition of the car park continues to deteriorate, and there is the risk that parts of the structure could fall on passers-by, causing injury. Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for Transport and Professional Services, added, "Given the condition of the structure as highlighted within the structural engineer's report, it is not possible to bring the car park fully back into use without incurring a disproportionate level of expense."
UKIP quits toxic party to join the Tories. A UKIP councillor has defected to the Tories, saying the party has become, quote, toxified by internal turmoil. Councillor Chris Wood, who represented UKIP on Hampshire County Council and Fareham Borough Council, revealed this morning that he's ended his 4.5-year stint with the party. He has previously courted controversy after questioning the BBC for casting a black actor in a, quote, white role, and described Hampshire County Council as, quote, outrageous and irresponsible, after it dumped confidential documents in an abandoned building. In a statement on Tuesday, Councillor Wood said, "I have not taken this decision lightly. There are many good and decent people in UKIP whom I regard as friends. However, I don't believe in opposition for opposition's sake. There are many who will recognise that UKIP has become toxified over the last 18 months through comments about HIV and AIDS, amongst other issues, such as Nigel Farage's resignation. In recent weeks, an out-of-touch and unreformable National Executive Committee, Diane James's 18-day stint as leader, and alleged violence in the European Parliament have been the final straw. It's an exciting time for our nation, and I'm convinced that the Conservative Party will deliver Brexit. I wholeheartedly support Theresa May's leadership."
Animal guests visit homes. Two Winchester care homes were visited by some unusual guests last week. Residents at Colton Cares St Catherine's View welcomed Remy, the American corn snake, Millie, the giant millipede, and Vincent, the Russian tortoise. The animals were brought by expert handlers from Creature Teachers in New Milton and the Alton-based Mill Cottage Mobile Farm. Activities organisers Cody Hickman and Sophie Lambton invited children from nearby St Swithin's School and Topps Day Nursery to enjoy the fun too. Cody said, "The visits were a great chance for different generations to share a moment together. For those of our residents who had animal contact in the past, it was a really good way to stimulate memories." Residents at its Abbots Barton Nursing and Residential Care Home were visited by Flo, a Bengalese eagle owl, and Charlie, the barn owl, who swooped in as part of Macmillan World's biggest coffee morning. Staff, volunteers and visitors also took time to meet and learn about their new feathered friends after they were brought along by the Birds of Prey display team Falcon High. Aside from the chance to greet and hold Flo and Charlie, guests at the coffee morning had the choice of seven different types of cake baked for the occasion by Abbott's Barton chef, Lorraine Holder. And there are three photographs with this article. One is of the Abbott's Barton chef, Lorraine Holder, standing with some of the residents and a huge variety of scrumptious-looking cakes. And Abbott's Barton resident Barbara meeting Flo, the Bengalese eagle owl, who looks absolutely beautiful. And Sandy Richards is about, I think, the Millie the giant millipede is just going across the back of her hand.
Driverless tractors tested in Hampshire. The vehicle, which uses technology from the Ordnance Survey to enable it to follow a pre-planned course, was put through its paces at the mapping agency's headquarters at Nursling. It is hoped that the model will enable farmers to work more efficiently during planting, spraying, harvesting and cultivation of crops. An Ordnance Survey signal network of more than 110 base stations covering all of Britain allows tractor manufacturer CNH Industrial to supply positioning data to the website. According to Ordnance Survey, the use of remote control tractors could save £34 million per year in reducing errors made in planting cereal and oilseed. The Department for Transport carried out a consultation over the summer to pave the way for automated vehicles to be used on British roads.
This week's letter from Westminster is from George Hollingberry, who's the MP for Meon Valley. He begins, "Meritocracy is a wonderful word. It trips off the tongue, and it has an air of fairness and decency about it. Politicians and industry have gone on about its importance for years, but I know that for many people who live in this country, it's remained just a word, without much meaning for them. However, there's no doubt in my mind that when Theresa May talks about making the United Kingdom a meritocratic country that works for everyone, she means it. And for me, it's a vitally important message because this is what I got into politics to do. Now, OK, I accept I'm hardly an objective observer because I work very closely with the Prime Minister on a daily basis as her parliamentary private secretary. But this central message is an admission that much more must be done to give people a fair chance and that the political classes from all sides for many years have failed to achieve it. Theresa May is happy to make those admissions that pay has stagnated these last few years, that home ownership is out of sight for many. So this is more than just words or soundbites about a meritocratic country. It's about laying down what the problem is, admitting the past failures and striving hard to do something about it."
Woman dies after flats fall. A Winchester woman died after falling from a block of flats. Police say the 54-year-old fell from a balcony at the five-storey Parmiter House on Wales Street. Many floral tributes have been left at the scene. Ambulance crews and police were called on Friday, September the 30th. A police spokesperson said the woman died as a result of her injuries and the incident is not being treated as suspicious. Officers are currently preparing a file for the coroner. An inquest has yet to be opened at the time the Chronicle went to press. A customer in the First In, Last Out pub paid tribute to the woman. He said, "I have known her for years. She was a lovely lady." Meanwhile, a bar manager at the First In, Last Out pub, who was on duty, said he heard the ambulance arrive and said, "I saw the ambulance arrive and people trying to resuscitate her. I have only met the woman once or twice, but a lot of regulars have been quite upset about it. They all know the lady and were good friends with her." A woman who was laying flowers underneath the window said, "It is a shock to all of us." And there is a photograph of a floral tribute.
Fracking unlikely to arrive anytime soon. The controversial process of fracking is unlikely to come to Hampshire in the near future, campaigners have said. Despite the government giving the green light for fracking to extract shale gas from a site in Lancashire, the prospect of it coming to Hampshire is not imminent. Part of Hampshire sits above the Weald Basin, a huge region that spans Surrey, Sussex, and the eastern edge of Hampshire, but could contain as much as 100 billion barrels of oil. It is because any fracking would be to extract oil rather than gas that makes it unlikely that the method would be used in Hampshire. Caroline Dibdham, South Hampshire chairman for the Campaign to Protect Rural England in Hampshire, said, "There is a fundamental difference between the Lancashire case and Hampshire, in that it is expected that Hampshire's shale will only produce oil, not gas. The need and the economics of oil are completely different and do not form part of the government's current plans for a future energy mix. Nonetheless, if any fracking exploration application does come forward in Hampshire, then the Campaign to Protect Rural England will be closely evaluating the likely impact of any adverse visual amenity, the potential for noise and light pollution, the use and disposal of water, the traffic increase and impact on any rural roads, and the regulatory and safety proposals, including any threat to water supplies." As reported in the Chronicle, oil has already been found in four parts of the county, including three areas south of Winchester, Basingstoke, and Andover. Fracking involves drilling thousands of feet underground, then pumping in pressurized water to crack the rocks and release trapped pockets of oil or gas. The controversial technique has been linked to earthquakes and other environmental problems. The government's decision to allow fracking in Hampshire has been criticised by environmental campaigners. Brenda Pollack, Friends of the Earth South East campaigner, said yesterday's decision could be bad news. "This shows our government is prepared to ride roughshod over local people's wishes," added Miss Pollack. "This is not just bad news for Lancashire. It could have a knock-on effect on the Weald Basin too. Instead of keeping us hooked on climate-wrecking fossil fuels, the government should invest in more renewables and energy efficiency." However, Hampshire Chamber of Commerce Executive Director Stuart Dunn said that fracking could be good for the local economy. "Clearly," he said, "it will help contribute to the economy, create many jobs, and create an efficient energy resource." However, Mr. Dunn added he would like the government to use fracking as part of a larger portfolio of energy resources.
Here's a bit of good local news. Winchester taxi fares frozen. Mm-hmm. Winchester's licensing chiefs have again frozen taxi fares in the district. City councillors reviewed the Hackney Carriage charges and have decided not to increase them for the fifth year running. This means that the first 660 yards will still cost £2.80, with 20 pence for each 170 yards thereafter. And the licensing committee agreed to review the charges once more in a year's time.
Uni links to animal welfare. The University of Winchester has partnered with an animal welfare charity. University Vice Chancellor Professor Joy Carter and Cindy Milburn, the International Fund for Animal Welfare's IFAW, Director of Outreach and Policy Development, signed an agreement which sets out the partners' joint commitment to working together on animal welfare issues. The agreement includes plans for IFAW, which works to improve the welfare of wild and domestic animals throughout the world, to give guest lectures at the university about animal welfare in action within the animal welfare conservation sector, and to offer work placements and volunteering opportunities to students studying at Winchester. Both organisations will also work closely on research to fill gaps in understanding about current and future animal welfare issues. Professor Joy Carter said, We are delighted to be partnering with our IFAW to further the work of our Centre for Animal Welfare. As a university, we are driven by a deep commitment to value all life, nurturing compassion for people, animals, and the planet. We care about the world around us, so our teaching and research tackles global challenges, and we strive to ensure our students go on to make a real difference in the world. Animal welfare is an increasingly important concern in our society, and with this partnership, we hope to make an even bigger impact in tackling animal welfare issues globally. The university has already demonstrated its commitment to contributing to the advancement of animal welfare with the launch of its groundbreaking Centre for Animal Welfare in May.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, John Regan.
Bye-bye.
Maria Head.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Farewell.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye, and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.